"This has been a wonderful day," said he, as the rat shoved off and took to the sculls again. "Do you know, I've never been in a boat before in all my life." "What?" cried the rat, open-mouthed. "What have you been doing, then?" "Is it so nice as all that?" asked the mole shyly. "Nice? It's the only thing," said the water rat solemnly, as he leaned forward for his stroke. "Believe me, my young friend, there is nothing, absolutely nothing, half so much worth doing as simply messing about in boats. Simply messing," he went on dreamily, "messing about in boats. Messing—" "Look ahead, rat," cried the mole suddenly. It was too late. The boat struck the bank full tilt. The dreamer, the joyous oarsman, lay on his back at the bottom of the boat, his heels in the air. "About in boats, or with boats," the rat went on composedly, picking himself up with a pleasant laugh. "In or out of them, it doesn't matter. Nothing seems really to matter. That's the charm of it. Whether you get away or whether you don't, whether you arrive at your destination or whether you reach somewhere else, or whether you never get anywhere at all, you're always busy and you never do anything in particular. And when you've done it, there's always something else to do, and you can do it if you like, but you'd much better not."
The author of those thoughts about doing nothing was Kenneth Graham, but it could be you. Author is You, a Wisconsin School of the Air series about the process of writing creatively. Today's program is conducted by children's author Jacqueline Jackson.
The title of this program is Don't Just Do Something, Sit There. But it could well be Messing About. Mostly adults are against kids just messing about, because they themselves were brought up always to be doing something, or else they've forgotten the times that they weren't under work and world pressures. They, and maybe I should say we, feel guilty when we're not doing something, and we're uncomfortable when other people aren't. I'm fond of cartoons, the High and Lois cartoons in particular. Here's one where Chip is walking home from school, and it's apparently the last day of school. "My mom has every minute of my time planned this summer," says Chip, and his friend says, "You're lucky, I don't have anything to do." Chip: "Yeah, but all the lessons, I'm taking swimming, tennis, sailing, and piano. I wish I could learn some of that stuff." And Chip again: "My mom can't stand to see me loafing around the house wasting time." And his friend says, "My mom's never home." Says Chip: "Well, I wish she'd stop bugging me." Then the friend says, "That kind of bugging I could use." And they suddenly both turn and look at each other, and then you see Chip's friend coming into the kitchen and saying to Chip's mother, "Chip and I traded." So maybe there is something about underprogramming our lives, but on the whole, I have the feeling that most of us have our lives overprogrammed, that we have too much going on, that we don't have enough time just simply to do nothing, to mess about. Children quickly get the idea that they should always be doing something. It was instilled into children very early. The old-time poet Isaac Watts, in his Divine and Moral Songs for Children, has the famous stanza, "In works of labor or of skill, I would be busy too, for Satan finds some mischief still for idle hands to do." The idea that if you are not doing something definite, something productive, that then you are into some sort of mischief that you shouldn't be doing. We could call this program idleness, too, or the values of idleness. And by idleness, I don't mean something like TV. I mean real idleness, not doing anything except what rises up out of your own head, out of your own spirit, out of your own innards. There's a couple of books whose titles I love by a fellow named Smith. One of them is called Where Did You Go? Out. What Did You Do? Nothing. And then the sequel to it is called How to Do Nothing with Nobody, All Alone by Yourself. Real idleness, I think, is what Ratty is talking about when he says, nothing seems really to matter, that's the charm of it. Whether you get away or whether you don't, whether you arrive at your destination or whether you reach somewhere else, or whether you never get anywhere at all, you're always busy, and you never do anything in particular, and when you've done it, there's always something else to do, and you can do it if you like, but you'd much better not. So what is idleness? What is doing nothing? Here are the last pages out of The House at Pooh Corner. Christopher Robin, as you know, in the two books about Winnie the Pooh, has been playing in the forest with his friends, Pooh, Piglet, Eeyore, and so forth. And now, in the last chapter, Christopher Robin is headed for school, and he is trying to break this news to Pooh. Then, suddenly again, Christopher Robin, who is still looking at the world with his chin in his hands, called out, Pooh. Yes, said Pooh. Pooh, yes, Christopher Robin, I'm not going to do nothing anymore. Never again? Well, not so much. They don't let you. Pooh waited for him to go on, but he was silent again. Yes, Christopher Robin, said Pooh helpfully. Pooh, when I'm not doing nothing, will you come up here sometimes? Just me? Yes, Pooh. Will you be here too? Yes, Pooh, I will be, really. I promise I will be, Pooh. That's good, said Pooh. You see, Christopher Robin is learning that pretty soon he's not going to be allowed to do nothing. And yet, what has Christopher Robin been doing in these two books? He's been doing a great deal of playing, of thinking, of putting his world together. And yet now he is saying they, meaning the adults, aren't going to let him do very much of nothing anymore. Here's a passage out of an old book called Pollyanna. She has just gone to live with her stern aunt, and the aunt is finding out what Pollyanna knows and what she can do, and has just discovered that she can do a little cooking. Chocolate fudge and fig cake indeed, scorned Miss Polly. I think we can remedy that very soon. She paused in thought for a minute, then went on slowly. At 9 o'clock every morning, you will read aloud 1/2 hour to me. Before that, you will use the time to put this room in order. Wednesday and Saturday forenoons, after 9:30, you will spend with Nancy in the kitchen, learning to cook. Other mornings, you will sew with me. That will leave the afternoons for your music. I shall, of course, procure a teacher at once for you, she finished decisively as she arose from her chair. Pollyanna cried out in dismay. Oh, but Aunt Polly, Aunt Polly, you haven't left me any time at all, just to live. To live, child? What do you mean? As if you weren't living all the time. Oh, of course I'd be breathing all the time I was doing those things, Aunt Polly, but I wouldn't be living. You breathe all the time you're asleep, but you aren't living. I mean living. Doing the things you want to do, playing outdoors, reading, to myself, of course, climbing hills, talking to Mr. Tom in the garden and Nancy and finding out all about the houses and the people and everything everywhere all through the perfectly lovely streets I came through yesterday. That's what I call living, Aunt Polly. Just breathing isn't living. And here's a little story that a mother told me about her son, that they had moved to a new town, and she came into his room shortly after that, and he was sitting on his bed, his chin in his hand, and looking out of the window. And a while later, she looked in again, and he was still there, just sitting and looking out of the window. And so she said to him, why don't you do something? What are you doing? And her son turned around, and he looked at her with a mixture of pity and weariness and almost disgust. And he said, living, Mom, just living. And she told that story on herself. All these bits and pieces that I've just given you are saying that there is some value in doing nothing. A student was criticizing a writer of early children's books called Mariah Edgeworth, and she said on her paper, unlike Mariah, I think idleness has value. It gives you time to think and to dream, and that is one way that people can come up with very creative ideas. We all have a great need for this kind of spare time, for this kind of unstructured time, for the in-between spaces and places that Bruno Bettelheim talks about in one of his books, because it is in these in-between spaces and places that so many important things take place. And yet, especially as we get older, we forget that, and we try to cram everything into every minute and make everything productive, doing something. Well, what is it that we're doing when we're doing nothing? There's a word, passivity, being passive. Ferdinand the Bull was passive. You remember Ferdinand, he just liked to sit and smell the flowers, and it was his fellow bulls that liked to jump and snort and butt and run around and so forth. And they all thought there was something wrong with him because he was being passive. He wasn't being active. Dr. George Weinberg has written, "To condemn passivity is like condemning your eyeballs. We need passivity to see, to discover, to learn." So you see, in these times when we are doing nothing, when we are simply messing about, actually there's a great deal going on. We're thinking, we're feeling, we're wondering, watching, being aware. Things are having a chance to sink in. Connections are being made. We're broadening our horizons. We're coming to know a kind of peace with ourselves, a peace without the pressures of always having to be being and doing and meeting deadlines. Megan, who is my 16-year-old daughter, must have known this kind of peace, this kind of idleness, to write, "Peace is like the quiet in one's ears, in one's own special room at midnight." When I was talking at a school once, a boy said to me, "You must like nature." And I said, "How do you know?" He said that there was a place in the Paleface Redskins where I talked about the flame-tipped trees as the sun was going down. And I said, "Yes, I remembered that place." And then he also commented on a spot where the sun was going down in another chapter where I mentioned that it was sitting on the horizon like a squashed tomato. Those observations weren't made by me saying, "I shall now observe a sunset. I shall now observe flame-tipped trees or squashed tomato suns." Those were made by watching sunsets over a good many years, many times. Sometimes things make a tremendous impression the first time. But other times, quietly, quietly, seeing the same things over and over, thinking the same thoughts over and over, make these kinds of grooves on our brains that stay there forever. And then we can call them up again if we want to and if we need to, and I think we do need to. In Palefaces, I call these spots sort of islands of time or wells where the things come up alone with yourself. There's a poem by William Henry Davies called Leisure. "What is this life if, full of care, we have no time to stand and stare? No time to stand beneath the boughs and stare as long as sheep's or cows. No time to see, when woods we pass, where squirrels hide their nuts in grass. No time to see, in broad daylight, streams full of stars like stars at night. No time to turn at beauty's glance and watch her feet, how they can dance. No time to wait till her mouth can enrich that smile her eyes began. A poor life this, if full of care, we have no time to stand and stare." So today it's a funny thing, I think. It's contradictory, it's paradoxical. When I have just been talking about the importance of doing nothing, to ask you to write something. I don't quite know how you'll work this out. If you will, today or tomorrow or sometime, I'd like to know what you think about doing nothing. When have you just messed about with boats or with science or with anything? When have you just stood and stared? When have you been kept from standing and staring? How do you do nothing with nobody when you're all alone by yourself? Thank you.
Author Is You, a Wisconsin School of the Air series about the process of writing creatively. Today's program was conducted by children's author Jacqueline Jackson. These programs are produced by WHA Radio, a service of University of Wisconsin Extension.